Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Good morning. Today is Thursday, March 26th. You're listening to Seeking Alpha, the leader in market news and analysis. I'm Rena Scherbel, and this is Wall Street Breakfast. Our top stories today. Today's jobless claims report set to grab attention of Wall Street and Main Street, expecting a drastically larger jobless figure, and Oracle is beginning a collaboration with the White House. Leading today's news. Today's weekly jobless claims report is set to grab the attention of both Wall Street and Main Street, offering proof that the economy is already in recession. The number, which could surge to at least 1 million, is especially in focus after the U.S. Labor Department asked individual state governments to postpone publishing unemployment data, dusting off the 2008 playbook. That would shatter a previous record of nearly 700,000 back in 82 when the U.S. hiked interest rates to quash inflation. S&P 500 futures are off by 1.5% ahead of the big release. In other market news, others are expecting a drastically larger jobless figure, with Barclays predicting that 2 million Americans were laid off last week, Citigroup forecasting the number at 4 million, said Diane Swank, chief economist at Grant Thornton. It's the tip of the iceberg, and they're going to be ugly. It depends on the speed at which the claims were filed, and the next week will probably be worse. You have 15.8 million people working in leisure and hospitality, and you just shut down the industry, added John Hill, fixed income strategist at BMO. Last night, the U.S. Senate approved a $2 trillion relief package that includes checks of up to $1,200 per taxpayer with income of up to $75,000, $500 billion in funds to help stricken sectors of the economy, $367 billion in loans to small businesses, and $100 billion for the healthcare system. The package now moves to the House of Representatives for their approval, although there's already speculation that further stimulus measures will be needed. The House votes on the bill on Friday. Yields on both the one-month and three-month Treasury bills fell below zero yesterday, marking the first time that's happened since 2015, when both bills briefly flashed red and yields fell to minus 0.002%. However, the readings on Wednesday were well below those, with the one-month trading at minus 0.053% and the three-month at minus 0.033%. Japan and large swaths of Europe have had negative yielding debt for some time now. In Germany, all government fixed income instruments, except the 30-year bond, carry rates below zero. The European Central Bank said it will not apply its self-imposed purchase limits, capped at 33% of each country's debt, on a 750 billion euro bond buying scheme aimed at combating the coronavirus outbreak. Tensions already erupted into the open in September following Mario Draghi's last easing package, while German critics have repeatedly taken the ECB to court over the purchases. Hawks on the council argue that if the ECB owns more than a third of a country's debt, it would have a blocking minority in any future debt restructuring negotiations, forcing a vote that could be attacked as monetary financing. Spain overtook China's coronavirus death toll yesterday with 3,434 fatalities, second only to Italy, highlighting a dire picture as older patients miss out on treatment to younger people with a better chance of surviving. Similar wrenching decisions are taking place in the U.S., with Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago and George Washington University Hospital in Washington exploring a universal do not resuscitate policy for infected patients. Atrium Health in the Carolinas, Geisinger in Pennsylvania, and regional Kaiser Permanente networks are also looking at guidelines that would permit overriding the wishes of a COVID-19 patient on a case-by-case basis, such as risk to doctors and nurses or a shortage of protective equipment. It would stop short of imposing DNR orders. Are chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine effective against COVID-19? It's not yet known, but Oracle is beginning a collaboration with the White House on creating a data repository for clinical trials. Two senior administration officials familiar with the matter say the online platform could gather data from physicians who prescribe the malaria drugs and track patient symptoms. Planners have also discussed using it to mail the treatments to patients involved in the trial. Major retailers are looking to ease the impact of the coronavirus pandemic, offering help and easing financing to their small business partners. Walmart is waiving April rent fees for its more than 10,000 businesses that operate within Walmart Supercenters and Sam's Clubs, including hair and nail salons, optometrists, restaurant franchises, veterinary clinics, and banks. Amazon is meanwhile pausing loan repayments until April 30th for sellers enrolled in its Amazon lending program, while interest will not accrue during that time. The G20 is usually a once-a-year event, but as the world confronts the coronavirus pandemic, 2020 host Saudi Arabia is chairing an emergency virtual summit today. Two meetings were additionally held in 2009 and 2010 at the height of the global financial crisis. Many are expecting similar coordinated fiscal measures. Also on watch is the U.S.-China relationship. Fears are running high that the coronavirus could undo the goodwill demonstrated between President Trump and Xi Jinping in January when the Phase 1 trade deal concluded. The collapse in oil demand will lead to a massive oil glut that not even a supply production freeze or cut from OPEC can rectify, according to Goldman Sachs, which predicts a 14 million BD surplus in Q2. Any potential agreement between the U.S., Saudi, and Russia to freeze or reduce output is too little too late. It would take months to impact inventories globally and would be dwarfed by the current demand losses. The firm sees Brent crude remaining near $20 a barrel next quarter, while West Texas Intermediate oil will likely fall well below that level as storage swells. Other market headlines to watch for on Seeking Alpha. Stepping down, Groupon CEO and COO. McDonald's streamlining U.S. menu during pandemic. Cheesecake Factory can't pay the rent. Salesforce promises no significant layoffs. Apple mulls 5G iPhone delay. Ford credit rating cut to junk at S&P. Ackman's Pershing Square makes $2 billion on market short. As of 6:20 a.m. today, stock futures, crude, gold, and Bitcoin are all down. And on the economic calendar, as we mentioned, at 8:30 are the initial jobless claims. Up next, we're sharing a special report excerpted from this week's Cannabis Investing Podcast. As we're living in unprecedented times, trying to keep fear and uncertainty at bay, it can be difficult to keep perspective. To help our listeners better understand the situation, Wall Street Breakfast is producing a series of special reports featuring the best of Seeking Alpha. Today's report features cannabis industry trailblazer, former Canopy Growth founder, and current executive chairman at Vireo Health, Bruce Linton, to discuss cannabis in the time of corona. As we've seen this week, some cannabis companies have been reporting day after day of record revenue as cannabis was deemed an essential item in many states. Cannabis stocks have also been generally up during this time and are even outperforming the S&P 500. However, we're also seeing some management shakeups, layoffs, and some supply chain disruption. So Bruce shares his insights into how investors can navigate this environment, what this pandemic may mean long-term for businesses, and why he feels that now is actually the best time to make his company stronger through accretive acquisitions. Email us at wsbpod@seekingalpha.com if you have any feedback or requests for special reports. We hope you enjoy this one.
I know right now it's hard to know how anything's about to play out as we're all kind of hunkered down in our homes awaiting a pandemic to pass through, but what's your view on the states? Do you think it's going to continue to be a state-by-state process, or do you see descheduling at the federal level happening?
Well, I think that discussion would have happened in a normal course election, which this for sure is not going to be.
Right.
I don't even know, will they have an election in November? No, I think anybody that says for sure they will has to decide why they hold that view. Because how do you do an election if people can't congregate? How do you have, you can just see where that goes. So this election in a normal course would have had a topic called federal regulation of cannabis. And I think what they would have said on each side of the political divide is that we support whatever the states support. Meaning that as a federal politician, you're not causing friction because you're only agreeing with what they've already said they want to do. So that in the context of say Colorado, where they have medical and rec, that would be federally permissible and companies operating in that jurisdiction with state licenses would be permissible to access things like NASDAQ or NYSE capital market listings, full banking. But if if they don't get to that topic, I think we continue on as we are for some time. And I don't know that that improves anything. I'm frankly now of the view that this topic probably won't be part of the election and that it's going to go on to states. And that means states will have to decide what they want to do and do it. But I think states like New York have been clear what they want. New Mexico, I can see Arizona going there. So there, this I think might end up being more of the same for the next several years, despite the fact that it polls extremely well to change it.
If and when the next election comes, do you see it as being part of the topic then, or who knows, or the further it go, it becomes a state-by-state process, maybe they just let that play out?
I think they just let it play out, regrettably, for a bit. And it's not because it's marijuana. It's the topic polls extremely well. Like, if you asked a majority of Americans, do you agree with what your state is doing with regard to cannabis, the people in the state say yes, because these things have passed various mechanisms of approval. So it's not a touchy topic to do it that way. The problem really is that there are a lot of other topics like COVID, yes, trade wars, yes. Should they exit jurisdictions where they're at war? Probably. So I'm worried that juggling this into the agenda of actual decision tree topics is getting ever more complicated in the U.S.
Given the fact that we're dealing with some variables that we, you know, it's impossible to predict, but within this, the reality that we're in, what's your vision the next, you know, let's say if we're talking a year from now and then a couple years from now, where do you see Vireo heading? What's your goal there?
Yeah, I think they're going to continue to do a very good job of registering patients and actually being responsible in how they manage them and continue to seek ways that they can get to dosages and titration and detailed answers for them. And that base plate information will create interesting products for rec. I think at least 3 to 5 of the markets they're in are going to become medical and rec over the next 18 months. So I think that the company has an upside driven by responsible production that gets really leveraged into a bigger market in those core markets, and that our retail footprint will be in the right locations and meaningful. So we'll capture the opportunity that's at hand. And if you do it well, the cost of creating that retail is more than fully recovered in less than the first year of operating from what I see in a place like Michigan. So it's pretty easy to get excited about, build it, crank it, and, you know, really see the upside. Now, over the COVID period, which is an undefined period, I don't know, maybe people will get used to ordering online a lot more. Maybe people will get used to delivery a lot more. And so we need to have our capacity there. We've already had a delivery platform available in New York. And so part of my discussion with the guys today is going to be about what if COVID actually has a duration of time that changes people's buying patterns, and that is a durable effect after COVID disappears. Right. Are we prepared for that? So you got to think about those things.
Is that being discussed a lot about how much these temporary situations, just like how you're mentioning, how much they're going to affect or change consumer behavior long-term?
Well, I suspect they're not being, I talk to myself about it a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't know that when I think about these things, there's always something that is durable that comes from a crisis.
Right.
So, you know, 9/11 gave us airports with very different security methodologies that didn't disappear.
Right.
2008 gave us a number of financial constraints and controls on banks and things like stress testing that didn't happen before. And I think COVID is going to give us a pattern of consumption and interaction that's different than we had before. And so, if you can predict what that might be and play successfully into it as a business, providing the services that people want in this time, they will become a durable option for them after.
How did you decide? I know you're on record as saying part of the reason you came to Vireo was their emphasis on IP, you know, which you mentioned a little bit that you were developing at your time at Canopy as well. Was that the main focus? And how hard was it to settle on Vireo itself? Or did it feel like synchronicity at that point?
The first thing I liked about them is that they were very science-driven. Science is a discipline. And so when they approached things, they approached it with a methodical discipline. So for example, when they were selling and are selling vaporizable products, they actually had an adverse reporting tool that they'd used from day one to track whether or not there'd been any adverse incidents reported. This was way before Vapegate. And so the effect of that was that they had certainty, they had no underlying liability from their products. And in fact, safety was correlated directly with legal products. So I like that discipline. I like the fact that if you look at the geographies in which they have active operations, 7 states in which they're primarily active are all currently in the U.S. medical only. which means that the market has the potential to get materially larger when recreational access is added. And the places in which they operate, they're medical only. A lot of them are well-governed. So think of New York State, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Mexico, Arizona. Those are ready to rip states. And so one of the companies I'm involved with, which is a single state operator, is called Gage. And the reason I was there is I wanted to see what kind of torque you got in a place like Michigan when it went from medical only to medical and rec. And the answer is humongous, like 10, 20X, depending on how you position. And so I thought in the context of Vero, if you have science discipline, you've built out a platform for production and you have begin to have initiating retail, that means you can create the best locations to sell your products so that you're most ready for the torque that happens with the second gear, which is recreational access. And so those combinations really drove me to have a view that they could go. They weren't that huge yet. So when you think about if you invest a dollar in a company which is 50 million and it has those attributes, it's much easier to have a potential rate of return that sees it become 200 million than if it's already 500 million and you're hoping. So I thought the combination of their valuation, which was directly correlated with not being particularly well known. I congratulate you for actually knowing them and asking me. I have said for a long time, people almost never buy a stock in a company they've never heard of.
Right.
The opportunity to take that combination of things that I just described and then elevate their visibility, I think will create increased value just because they can be selected as a stock to own.
You talked a little bit about on the conference call about developing strategic partnerships, having some acquisitions possibly. What's the plan there? Does that still stand? And what is it that you are looking for in terms of partnerships and or acquisitions?
I have a call with guys this morning. I have a couple ideas on acquisitions right now. First thing we had to do is make sure that we had financial stability. So, you know, there were a lot of people a bit surprised that we were able to raise a little more than $8 million. I guess it was 2 weeks ago today that that announcement went out, because the stocks had been falling every day for quite 3, 4, 5 days before that. We had a 2-day window where the price has stabilized. We closed the financing. And as you've noted, the stocks have fallen even more and more rapidly since then, but the cash is in the bank and the company's stable, which means out there, there are companies that do not enjoy such a similar state and they should therefore be purchased inexpensively relative to 4 weeks ago. And so there are a number now I want to look at, and I want to think if they can actually accelerate our path to profitability, the depth we have in geographies. So, you know, this is now, believe it or not, to me, this is one of the best times ever to actually make the company bigger and stronger through transactions that are accretive. And so I'll try and bring that level of aggression to our topics today, because a lot of times when bad things are happening, people want to hide and hunker down. I think it's really actually a much better time to go and do something.
I'm interested in your thoughts on, you know, cannabis 2.0 didn't go as well as people might have hoped or thought. What are your thoughts on the state of, you know, that industry, that part of the industry, the edibles, the beverages? Do you think it's just a matter of working out the regulations?
It's too early to determine, right? The best beverage in the world with cannabis in it is launching in Canada as we speak. And by the end of this month, will be available in multiple provinces, states. So you can buy it online and ship it to your house. There's an instance of where I think people are actually going to subscribe to that. And when COVID's over, they're going to actually prefer these beverages. So I think 2.0 is just barely, it hasn't yet launched, and we'll have to judge how it's working about a year from now. And then 3.0, we'll see, we'll start to unfold during that same time, because clinical trials, unless fully disrupted, would be ongoing so that the data could be read on whether or not, as a, you know, primary insomnia mechanism of dealing with, there are certain combinations of cannabinoids that work the best, or for geriatric care. And so I think 3.0 is going to fall in overlap with 2.0, and 2.0 is just beginning.
Your view of the industry coming from Canada to the States, has it changed or evolved at all in that changing of geography?
Yeah, I would say it has. Sometimes when you're outside of the company, like Canopy, you see it differently. And what I see there is something that I didn't realize how advanced we had become relative to the global platform or competitors. And now when I look around and see that the company, I think it has about $2.5 billion in the bank. That seems like that was probably a good thing to get them there. So I see how much of an influence that created on the world. And then I start looking at where each of those pieces could be in other companies.
And if you had to give advice to investors looking at the space and not knowing how to separate the wheat from the chaff, let's say.
If the instrument's put together in a way that looks so fancy, so elegant, but you don't necessarily know or like the underlying entity, forget it. Because there's so many things being packed up. It reminds me a bit of the asset-based backed credit, you know, the ABC stuff. Mm-hmm. If you don't understand the portfolio or like it, why are you buying it? And I'm seeing so many things packed up with a full warrant and a 12 or 20% carry and blah, blah, blah. Listen, at the end of the day, if the underlying business is not something that you fundamentally believe in and like, stay away from it, because there's a lot of creative efforts out there to package up stuff that I don't comprehend. And so it's still go back to the basics. Like, does this company operate and produce products in a way that you would actually want to be a customer? And regrettably for a bunch, the answer is no.
Before there was some talk about like descheduling at the federal level, there was a lot of excitement around the Safe Banking Act. Do you see that as coming back into the fold, maybe passing more cannabis-friendly legislation that will help companies a bit in their path to profitability?
I don't know that it actually, implementation is everything. It to me is like, it's almost like what it does is it actually opens the door to a really useful discussion. It doesn't actually become in and of itself particularly valid or useful. Mm-hmm. Because does that enable listing on a US exchange? Does that give you governance over things like the tax scheme so that you can actually deduct your operating costs at retail from your income? I don't know that it does any of that.
Even if it doesn't help, do you see it as coming back on, do you see it as being back in the discussion?
Yeah, I think it'll be back in the discussion. I think it's a bellwether, almost like a testing balloon to determine if they can actually have a real and valid discussion about making this so that it's federally permissible and therefore federally legal if governed by the state. Mm-hmm. That would be a useful outcome. This might actually enable that discussion and therefore could be useful if it gets to be back on the agenda and executed.
Aside from the obvious COVID answer, is there anything that's giving you pause in the industry right now or wish that it could be maybe slightly different?
I think the timing of the capital markets retracting from the prior high and irrational valuations not attached to the operating value of the companies, incredibly timed with COVID because it's been compounded in terms of how serious the downturn is in access to capital for the companies. The reason that's problematic is it's going to hurt a lot of people, but it might expedite the whole process of getting to the valid companies. And so I'm watching it from that perspective more than anything else.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.